drive in the computer. Russ just tried to stab it. Okay. Before we start the sugya, first of all, two things. I want to mention the Rav Chaim that I talked about 2 days ago, two shiurim ago. And in the last week, it's glad to see the Rav Chaim inside, or to see the notes inside, because I see the Rav Chaim doesn't say exactly the way I said it over. So in the notes, I fixed it. It says it a little bit differently. But I don't want to go through it again, because I'll be ready in the next sugya. But this Mara Mokum Aloch, it's glad to take a look there. I also want to talk just a couple of minutes about something else entirely. It relates to what I talked about last week in the extracurricular part of Shiva. I talked last week about the obligation not to change your habits. But that's the biggest, every generation, the biggest obligation we have is not to change your habits, to give over the same your habits to the next generation that we receive. And I said at the time, even though you find that there were innovations, people made innovations, in the course of history, great Rabbanim, but the innovations were always for the purpose of preserving the Messiah, of being Machzir HaTorah L'Yoshna, not an innovation to change Yahadus. Innovations were always to preserve Yahadus. And at the time, I mentioned, among other things, I mentioned Sarah Schneer's founding of the original Beis Yaakov. So I had occasion to talk about this elsewhere as well. And people come over to ask me questions, and here in Yeshiva, people ask me questions. And I see there's a certain misconception, a historical misconception, that I think is worth addressing, because there's a certain revisionist history that's going on about the Sarah Schneer and the Beis Yaakov. There's a certain perception that what Sarah Schneer, what she did, what was revolutionary about what she did, was that she taught girls Tanakh, she taught girls Torah Shebiksav. Up to that point, people were machzir. They didn't teach Tanakh to girls. They didn't teach Torah Shabbat. Even Torah Shabbat to girls. They're very machzir in the issue of kilu malam betiflus. So Shneir came and she broke that barrier and she made a crystal. She taught Tanakh. She taught the Torah to girls. That was what was revolutionary. And then the narrative goes: so Shneir, she broke the barrier of Torah Shabbat, and then the Rav broke the barrier of Torah Shabbat Peh. And then, you know, we're just pushing the envelope further and further and further. So that's completely wrong. That's completely wrong. It's not true. It's not true that before Sarah Schneer, girls didn't learn Tanakh, and girls didn't learn Torah. There were lots of women, and there were lots of women who were illiterate. That's certainly true. Who were Jewishly illiterate. My wife's grandmother, when she came to this country, she used to read letters. There were ladies who didn't know how to read at all. They couldn't read Yiddish, so she would read letters to people who were getting letters from Europe. There were lots of women who were illiterate. Lots of men who were also almost illiterate, who maybe had a couple of years of cheder, and that was it. But there were lots of illiterate or semi-illiterate people. But in learned circles, in rabbinic circles, it was very accepted that girls learned Tanakh, learned Torah, you know, at the Torah Shabbat more, but that girls learned, there were girls who were very learned. And it wasn't considered to be, there wasn't anything revolutionary about that. I know my grandmother grew up, her father was a literature of, not modern at all. He was very, and he was a Talmud of Rav Baruch Ber, and he was an Agudist, and he was an anti-Zionist, and he was like a real Haredi Rav. And he hired a tutor to teach her Tanakh. She didn't go to Beis Yaakov. There was no Beis Yaakov, anything like Beis Yaakov where she lived. And he hired a tutor. By the time she was 9, she had learned all of Tanakh, and she was a considerable milumedis. She knew Medrash a lot, and she was a great milumedis. And she wasn't exceptional. I mean, she was exceptional, but she wasn't that exceptional. There were many other such examples. Rabbi Zalman Rebbetzin was a great milumedes. She was known. She was a great milumedes. She knew Tanakh code. She knew. She transcribed her husband's ksavim when he wrote the Eben Ozel. So his handwriting was very illegible. So she did the transcription, put it together, which he acknowledges in the Akdama. She was a famous milumedes. There's a story about the. It's a cute story. Rav Shach married a niece of Rav Zalman. So Rav Zalman was sitting at the table with some other London when Rav Shach was there. And Rav Shach mentioned the Pasuk in Mishlei, Mevorech Ve'el, Bekol Godol, Ba'boiker Hashkem, Mevorech Ve'el, Bekol Godol, Boiker Hashkem, Ba'erev, Kolot Echoshevloi. So Rav Zalman's Rebbetzin was there. His name was Bela Hinda, Rebbetzin Bela Hinda. she was there, and she said that she's misquoting the pasuk. It doesn't say the word be'erev. So Rav Shach said, no, are you sure that it says the word be'erev? So Rav Shach ran to the bookshelf, and he took out a Gemara Bava Kama, and he looked up Rav Gimel Amid Beis, and Tosfos brings the pasuk, and it says the way Rav Shach quoted. It says the word be'erev. So Rav Itzin Beilah Hinder, she ran to the bookshelf, and she took out a Mishnah, she took out a Tanakh, and she opened up the pasuk in Mishnah, and it doesn't say be'erev. And her daughter was Rebbetzin Kulter of Aaron Rebbetzin. And this is long before Bishakov. She grew up long before the Rebbetzin. This is Amish Rebbetzin was before, grew up long before there was anybody ever thought about Bishakov. And her daughter was Rebbetzin Kulter. Also, I don't think went to Bishakov. And also, it was Yadua that she knew Tanakh with Malbim Balpeh. That was the Shmuel, that she knew Tanakh with Malbim Balpeh. And not only by the literature. Could multiply examples. That Shabina Rov was a Chassidusha, Galatiana. Shabina Rov's mother was a famous Melumedes. Her husband was the Chayim Yaakov, was from Gdolei Ador in Galicia. And she was a famous Melumedes. She knew Tanakh, she knew more than Tanakh. There's a story that she was also a very great wit. There was a story that they were reading a Shidduch to her son, and the other side, the girl side, they wanted that she should send a picture of the Bacha. Today, the Bacha may want a picture of the girl, but they wanted then a picture of the. They wanted they should send it. She should send a picture of the buffer. So she's. Her response was. It works better in the Galiciana pronunciation. She said, "Lo yeyosa kein bim kaimenu, lo yeyosa kein bim kaimani, lo seis hatziro lefnei habachiro." The tziro, the tzura, the picture in front of the buffer. Anyway, she was a great lot of stories about her pikkus and about her erudition. And there are many such examples. And nobody was scandalized by it, and nobody looked askance by it. That wasn't the chiddush of Sarah Schneer. The revolution of Sarah Schneer was that she instituted formal education for girls. There wasn't formal Jewish education for girls. Girls learned at home, they had tutors, or they learned with their. They didn't have formal, there weren't schools, Jewish schools to teach Torah to girls. And that was Sarah Schneer's innovation to institutionalize. Have formal education for girls, in a way not so dissimilar from what Rav Chaim Volozhin did with the yeshivas. That there were little yeshivas, not exactly the same, but there's a certain historical parallel. There were small yeshivas. It was always very informal. But every rabbonim had talmidim, they had talmidim in their beis medrash, little small yeshivas. And Rav Chaim Volozhin wanted a centralized major yeshiva. A major yeshiva would attract bachim from all over. Russia, yeah, I think 200. There were 200 talmidim in Volozhin. We imagine Volozhin was like 5,000 talmidim. Maybe there were 200 talmidim, but it was the elite of all of. But Akapanim, the chiddush of Chaim Volozhin wasn't that they taught boys Torah. The chiddush of Chaim Volozhin was that it was a certain institutionalization of what up till then had been much more informal, and the centralization. It's not exactly parallel, but Sarah Schneer is what she innovated. It's not such a radical. She wasn't a pioneer that up till then nobody ever taught Tanakh to girls. The innovation was to have formal education for girls. Has nothing to do with teaching Torah to girls per se, and that was Taka Chiddush. And she had to. She consulted with the Chofetz Chaim. She consulted with the Ger Rebbe. But it wasn't the kind of revolution that people ascribed to her. And it's also a mistake to think there was so much opposition. People think Sarah Schneer, there was some kind of terrible opposition to what Sarah Schneer did. It's not true. There was really hardly any opposition. I'm not saying by Samer, which is like a different planet, but B'shas Maisa in the countries where they were, but with Beis Yaakov's. There really was not opposition to speak of. And the reason why, and there was no opposition because, first of all, it wasn't such a great revolution, and number two, because it was very clear that there was a great need. It was clear that it was necessary to save Yiddishkeit. Girls were not marrying B'nai Torah. Nobody wanted to marry B'nai Torah. In the Tkufa, in that generation, because of the inroads of the Haskola and the inroads of socialism and the inroads of all the other social upheavals that had taken place, nobody wanted, no girl, no self-respecting girl wanted to look at a yeshiva man. There was a witticism that was current in Europe at the time. That why do you have to stand up for? You have to stand up for a hunchbacked girl. If a girl's a hunchback, you have to stand up. Why? Because she's going to marry Yeshiva Bacher, so it'll be Eishes. So she's already has a innovation Talmid Chacham. Because who else is going to marry Yeshiva Bacher if not a hunchbacked girl? Somebody who has some kind of nobody else will take her. But you think in the mirror, nobody they didn't get married till a very late age. It wasn't because there was nobody would marry a yeshiva bacher couldn't find a shidduch. Girls weren't interested in B'nai Torah. So it was clear that there was a tremendous need that they had to, and that was what Sarah Schneer did. But it's not the revolution was not in the teaching of girls per se, and it has nothing to do to make a comparison, to draw an analogy between that kind of revolution And we're talking about today to change the roles of the, we're talking about transformation of gender roles and so on. It's mamish has nothing to do, it's not connected to the Rav teaching Torah to girls either. I mean, Sarah Schneer, it's nothing to do with what the Rav did. What the Rav did was Taka Chiddush, but it's nothing to do with Sarah Schneer's Chiddush. So I don't think that the comparison holds any water. So it's important to set the record straight. People quote Sarah Schneer all the time as if, you know, that's the, she was the pioneer of, she was a trailblazer, the feminist trailblazer. And nothing could be further from the, nothing could be, anybody knows anything about who Sarah Schneer was and what her agenda was, knows that nothing could be further from the truth.
Yeah. I don't agree with this, with having women rabbis, but what about the kind of that people say that, so it's like nowadays that women are embarrassed to go to one of the Rav, about Shas Mida and all that stuff, therefore they say that this is like a...
You know, it's looking for an, they needed an excuse, so they pinned it on that. If I thought that was really the whole agenda, that was the only reason, because they're embarrassed to ask your Rav of Shaila. That was why you had that women who so Yeshal Malodon. But it's possible that that's not the reason. The reason is because they want to make this transformation. So they need a ksusinayim. They need some kind of excuse. What's the, so the excuse is they're going to be embarrassed to ask Rav. All the years people didn't have, well, thousands of years women weren't able to ask Shailas. And if they can't ask the Rav, they ask the Rebbetzin. The Rebbetzin will present the Shaila to the Rav. It's just they needed. It's just a. It's the thing that. It's just a way to justify what they want to do anyway and what they want to expand upon. The truth is, I feel a big need to talk about the whole issue. On the one hand, because I feel it's mamish, it's ala perek, and I see there's so much confusion. I follow what goes on among the rabbonim. They have on the internet they have discussion among the rabbonim from the Yeshiva University graduates, and I see I see this tremendous confusion. I see people they don't understand the chaymer inyan. So I feel a great need to talk about it. On the other hand, in a way, I have a reluctance to talk about it because I think it's the gather initial erez emagunah. It's the very fact that people are asking the shaila, that our talmidim are asking the shaila, shows there's something wrong with the education that we're giving. They don't understand on our own the chaymer inyan. They don't understand on their own that it's that you don't tamper with you don't tamper with Yiddishkeit. So I feel a little bit that it's should be beneath us to have to even talk about it. But on the other hand, it has to be talked about. So I don't want to talk it to death, but nonetheless, this point I wanted to make that the analogy is a false analogy, and I think it's tremendously dangerous. I mean, it's dangerous for so many reasons. I don't want to take away from the main reason, but it's dangerous. Anybody who's a royas and noilud understands that the minute they're going to be within our machane, they're going to make such a change, then our machane is going to fall off. From the machane of Torah. The minute we allow within our machane that there should be ordination of women, and we don't say that that's not part of a machane, that's mechutz la machane, so then we ourselves are going to be tainted with that and with everything that implies. I'll tell you just a story from the Chofetz Chaim, and with this I'll end. Chofetz Chaim once got on a train, and he started to say Tfilas HaDerech. So there were two other Jews there, they were apparently not so religious. So they said to the Chofetz Chaim, Rebbe, what, you think the train's not going to arrive? You know, Tfilas HaDerech, they were kilu implying. Tfilas HaDerech, that's for the olden days when they traveled by horse and buggy and it was dangerous. Today, it's the modern age. We fly on a train. There's not any danger involved. So what do you have to say Tfilas HaDerech for? So the Chofetz Chaim said to them, Der Bahn wird umkommen, oder Mirdafen umkommen. The train will arrive, but we have to arrive. And the story goes that before the train got to its destination, at one of the intermediate stops, these two people had to be rushed off the train because they were taken ill. The Ban Bet Onkumen, you know, the train will arrive. The train of the Yadis that's Nemon, that's loyal to the Messiah of Yiddishkeit, what it implies, the Yadis that Baruch Hashem, that Loyalman Yisrael still is led by great Talmid Chachamim. That train is going to continue on its destination. The question is, are we going to arrive with it? Are we going to chalila get off of the train? That's the shaila, and it's chalila that those people get off the train, but we have to make sure that we're not we remain on that train, and we arrive together with it in our proper destination. Okay.